So when I finished seminary, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. Seminary is this 3-year period in your life where you commit yourself to all kinds of not very interesting sounding classes in the hopes that at the end you will become a pastor. And so it's incredibly grueling. You're taking like classes on the Bible, classes on pastoral care. It's really a broad degree. And it's often scary when you get through a graduate degree after 3 years and you're like, I don't know if I can do this thing. And so I remember myself, I had all these fears, I had all these questions, and honestly, I had a lot of doubts if I could really be a pastor. And so what do you do when you're trying to delay making major life decisions? You defer your student loans and you get another degree on top of it is what you do. Not the wisest idea. But so what I did was I applied to do a PhD, and here's the irony, right? I did it in Bible and theology, you know, like as if like I had a fallback or something, right? And so so I applied to this school, and like surprisingly, I got in. I was like, just like, wow, you know, I'm like above average student, and I got into this PhD program. And so when I'm there, I basically said, this is going to be like my discernment season. I am just going to say, what could I be a pastor? What is this calling that I'm trying to discern within me? And every PhD student has to take what they call a transdisciplinary course, which is like a big code words for, we want you to think broad and deeply about the world, so you have to take this required course. And so mine happened to be The Legacy of Martin Luther King Jr., and I really was like, okay, this is a requirement. I've got to take it. Sounds good, you know, sounds like it'd be fun. And so I start taking this class, and PhD classes can often be like stuffy and academic. Like a lot of people in a room who take themselves way too serious. And like if you often can't even like cut a joke because they're like slow to get it, you know? So that's the type of environment it was. And this class, it was really amazing because it was diverse. And because right away the subject was Martin Luther King Jr. And so it sort of brought together a lot of people who were excited about our world. And as they divvied up like class assignments, it came to me, I had to study this book of sermons that Dr. King wrote called A Knock at Midnight. And what I was really drawn to about this is, well, I thought maybe I wanted to be a pastor, so I should maybe read Dr. King's sermons. And then I checked it out on iTunes, and they had all the same book on audiobook. So I got to be honest, that was a big appeal to me. And at first, it was really that superficial. But then as I began to listen to King's words, it was my first time in my life that I, besides the I Have a Dream speech that we all heard, but that I really began to hear the depth of them, this like passionate baritones cry for justice. And I remember like when I read them on the page, they were good and they were meaningful, but when I heard the voice, I heard something deeper, something richer. And I remember like going on these long walks and riding my bike and just putting in my iPhone and just listening over and over again to these incredibly powerful words. And really what it did was help me to think about Christianity. It put like this fresh humming take on Christianity that I had never heard before. And what it did also was, not only was this Christianity challenging and deep, but it was beautiful, because King's Christianity called out the very best in me and the very best in all of us. And it was like, this pastor has found something that I want. And I remember like one particular sermon one day, like I was just so moved. I'm on my bike and I'm so moved that I'm like crying. I'm sure that like the passerby cars are like, who's the crazy guy on the bike, right? I have to get off my bike and I literally just run over to this little tree and I just cry because this man's words were so compelling. It was a conversion experience for me of saying, if he can give his life, literally his flesh and his bones for this Christian faith, then man, I can give my life. And it was this call. If he can imagine a Christianity that's worth giving yourself to, then so can I. And as I've spent time kind of thinking about that experience and reading his words and letting them like soak into me more, I think that what's so incredible about his words is that Dr. King inspired solidarity. His words weren't simply fancy or to move you, but they inspired this community movement. And that's what you hear in every cadence and every rhythm that he poses, this deep sense of solidarity. So this year when Selma, the movie, came out, I was like, I've got to see that movie, right? And if you've seen the movie, if you haven't, the movie takes one snapshot of Dr. King's life. It focuses on 1965 and the Selma March that happens. And in this Selma March, what's going on in Selma is a lot is going on in Selma, a lot of racial discrimination. It's the height of the civil rights movement, and King is really on the forefront of that. And so himself, along with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and along with the Student Coordinating Nonviolent Committee, they like big acronyms in the 60s apparently, they organized this march. And it was supposed to sort of provide a tipping point so that they could write a bill, a voting rights bill, so that more African Americans could vote. And this vote would allow the systems to change and racism to go away. And so Martin Luther King comes to Selma on March 7th, 1965. And this is the atmosphere of Selma, Alabama in 1965. And this bridge from Selma to Montgomery, the Edmund Pettus Bridge, you can see the angst and the Ku Klux Klan, and like the tension is in the air in Selma. And so they decide that this march from Selma to Montgomery, this will be a nonviolent march, meaning we are going to nonviolently march this all the way to Montgomery, and this will put pressure on the president. But what happens when they begin this march on March 7th is that all of this tension, all this anxiety in the air led the deputies and allow the state troopers and allow some vigilantes to actually, we love babies, we love babies. we love Marky Jean. And this tension, the cops pulled out billy clubs, and it was violent and it was painful, but the television cameras were there and the newspaper reporters were there, and they called this day Bloody Sunday. So this gets known in history as one of the most darkest moments in history. And the real beauty of it, though, is that even though there was so much pain and so much violence, is that this is a snapshot of solidarity, because those cameras were in every American home, and millions of people decided, we need to go to Selma. We need to support what's happening in Selma. And so people of all different backgrounds, all different races, all different religious beliefs, they showed up in Selma. And they, on March 21st, it took a little while, they marched once again. And just look at this great picture. You see the diversity in the crowd. You see what's going on. And it was this beautiful moment of solidarity with the hurting pain of the world. And so in this moment, this moves President Johnson to write the 1965 Voting Acts right, and things begin to change in America. So this tragedy of Bloody Sunday ends up this incredible movement of freedom and racial change in America. And this leads us to this point of, what is solidarity? What is this big, huge word? And I want to define it today for us as the unity of purpose, empathy, and responsibility that compels us to act for a better world. So what's fascinating about this word is it only comes into our grammar in the last 100 years. It's actually not in the Bible. It's not a theological word. But this word is sort of buzzing in all the circles of churches that are thinking about it. This is a beautiful word to express what God is doing in our communities and in our life. So solidarity is the unity of purpose, empathy, and responsibility that compels us to act for a better world. So what I want to do is break down this definition of solidarity, and my greatest hope is that you will be inspired and that we will be inspired as a community to be in solidarity with our community and with our world. So the first, this unity of purpose. Solidarity is about all of us as one, and it's not always like we get there. Solidarity is like a virtue. It's like a beautiful thing that we are all striving towards, and only certain moments in our community life do we get there. But boy, when we get there, it is worth it. Solidarity is about purpose. And so this wonderful verse out of the Bible, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, so that everyone who believes in him may not perish but have eternal life." John 3:16. And in this verse, just in the same gospel, the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I come that they may have life and have it abundantly. And so what is incredible about the Bible, especially about the Gospel of John in these verses, is that it is very clear that the task, the purpose, the driving force of every Christian is to share love with people and places that need it the most. And notice that word share. That's not to not to sort of force it on people, not to have our own way, but to literally open our hearts and to discern how we can be the love that that person deeply needs. How we can paint on this canvas the love that the world is lacking. And so the whole purpose and intention of design from the very beginning is this: God invites us to share love with people and places that need it most. So I was talking to my son, Trey, trying to explain to a 9-year-old what solidarity meant. And he told me about this book that they read in class called City Green. And City Green tells this really cool story about an urban city where they knocked down a huge building that had been there for hundreds of years. But when they knocked it down, they left it there. Rubble and dirt, and it looked terrible in the city. And so the kids got to tell their parents about it. And then the parents started telling the grandparents. And then this whole city came together and they decided one by one and to gather as a community to take those bricks away and to build a community garden. And so my son is like teaching me, Dad, that's solidarity, right? I'm like, that's solidarity. That's awesome. And so he wanted to make sure that I shared that example of solidarity today. So with that sense of purpose, we come together as a community and we share love with people and places that need it the most. And solidarity is about unifying over empathy or compassion, letting our hearts hurt with those who are hurting. So this great verse says, Jesus answered, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Empathy. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: to care for orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world. And lastly, become compassionate, just as your heavenly Father is compassionate. And so we unify with one another. We grow in solidarity with the world when we let our hearts hurt by those things that are going wrong in our community, in our neighborhoods. And it's so funny to me, living in Highlands Ranch for almost 4 years now, the pain and the heartache, the mental illness that we face, the depressions and the teen suicides, it's overwhelming, the hurt and the pain that we have in this place. And as a community, we're called to be unite in our empathy for those who are suffering, for those who have had great heartache and pain. And it's a call, our empathy is a call to remember the least, the last, and the lost. Anyone who the power structures of our world have sort of forgotten about. Anyone who doesn't know how to advocate for themselves, who doesn't know the proper place to go. That's what Christian community is supposed to be in empathy and solidarity for those. 7 years ago in this church, they decided that they would talk seriously about that, about what it meant to be a reconciling church. And we've talked about this a lot before, but we gathered together and we studied the Bible and we wrote this statement that I think is absolutely about empathy for all those. And it says, St. Andrew United Methodist Church is a place for you. We embrace Jesus' message that God loves everyone and affirm that all persons are of sacred worth. We are proud to celebrate diversity as we work to live our vision of radical hospitality. We welcome people of every age, race, and gender identity, diverse nationalities, ethnicities, and sexual orientations, any family structure, economic reality, physical and mental ability, education, and faith history. While there are differences among us, we can love alike, though we may not think alike. You are invited to join this nurturing community on a faith journey toward greater love, understanding, and mutual respect. When they hired me, they like showed me that statement, and I was like weeping because I was like, that is beautiful. That is so beautiful and so empathy, and us being a community that flings our doors wide open for all of those. Last one we unite around in solidarity is responsibility. It's this incredible moment in the Gospel of John that says these words, I am in the Father and the Father is in me. But if you do not believe, then believe me because of the works themselves. Very truly, I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do. In fact, they will do greater works than these because I am going to the Father. I will do whatever you ask in my name so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If in my name you ask me for anything, I will do it. So the Gospel of John, if you were like, that is really strange, welcome to the Gospel of John. There are, the Gospel of John invites you to think really deeply, and it's basically, you should think of it as like a mystical gospel, one that is pushing you to think about the spiritual realities of our world. And this beautiful movement of the heart of God, that God and Jesus are one, and in that unity in God the Father and God the Spirit, this is a unity for us, because in classical thinking of God, that God is the community of shared love, and we share in this love with God, and that love motivates us to act responsibly. Not only motivates us, it compels us, right? To do all that we can for those who are suffering, those who are outside of the power structure. And so my example of this is 2 years ago, all of a sudden I'm in the sanctuary and this like real strong buff guy like runs in and he's like, hey, do you know Lee Knauert? And I'm like, yeah, I know Lee Knauert. And many of you know Lee Knauert. She is on our teaching team here. She teaches often, and she's an amazing woman. And she says, something really bad happened with her son, and they need your help. And I'm like, man, this church is crazy and amazing. And so these friends had flown into town because Lee's oldest son, Peter, had committed suicide earlier that night. And so these friends flew into town to make sure Lee was okay, because Lee has 3 other children, to shovel her driveway, to take care of her bills, to let her grieve all of this. And then my job was to set up this memorial service. And I didn't have to do much. It was the most beautiful thing, because everyone just started to respond. A band gave their time free to provide all the music. The head man from Olinger Mortuary in Nashville flew out here to make sure everything was correct. Okay, people gave cakes and pies, and then all of you gave money, because the hardest part of this whole thing was that Lee, as a single mom, was going to have to live in the same house. And so we gathered money to do something new with her house, and we raised enough money to get her a new house. And so it was everyone in the community. It was this sense of like, this is heartbreaking and this is hard, but all of us are going to pitch in. We're all going to do what we can, because we have this divine responsibility to share love with this family where it is lacking right now. So solidarity. And when we are solidarity, we seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare. And somehow, in this story of Lee and Peter, and in the story of all of our lives, when we share with one another, when we share that love, we find ourselves, don't we? We find that we are fully known and fully loved in deeper ways than we could ever imagine. And so solidarity is the unity of purpose, empathy, and responsibility that compels us. We are literally moved into action for a better world. So the church, at its very best, lives in solidarity all the time. We push behind us all those petty things, all those things that don't matter, and we strive to be that love, to share that love that the community most needs. So today, I want to end with a poem, and this poem is written by a man named Joel McCarro. He has an incredible Australian accent, and I do not. And so I want to read you this poem, and when you hear poems, allow the words to allow yourself to feel the words, allow the words to come over you. I met a man who saw the world differently, so I sat cross-legged at his feet, and he told me, remember the past, but cast your eyes forward. For tomorrow, our hope shall be allowed a voice, then our apathy. Our apathy shall finally take a step forward. Our steps forward shall lead us somewhere, mean something, hold meaning, like friends hold each other. Crying I am, crying for this world to change. Tears of empathy and sometimes apathy, I cry today for tomorrow. Even these tears shall be wiped from our faces. Lift your cheeks, though they are wet. There is one who shall collect them yet. Hold them in his hands and call it the ocean. Beckon you to set sail. Turn your face to the horizon. For tomorrow, the nooses drawn tight around the necks of the oppressed will be like halos, like the saints around their heads, a guiding light for the rest of us. Let us see that the way forward comes not through power and politic, but through small acts of courage and change, change, change us. Like the loose coins are never going to fix this problem, so let us go deeper than just charity. Change us like the sweatshops closing. Change us like the politicians stop posing. Change us like half the women of the world don't have to be abused. Change us like somebody has to stand up for tomorrow. Change us like the dream from King's speech. And change us like Nepal, heal this great breach. Change us like somebody has to stand up for tomorrow. Solidarity is the unity of purpose, empathy, and responsibility that compels us to act for a better world. And we as a community, we can't do it alone, not our individual self, but as a community, we can live in solidarity together. And the first step to change is allowing Jesus to pray in and through us. And so this week, we have seen incredibly tsunamic, difficult things in our world. And so I want to invite you, as your first step of solidarity, to allow yourself just a minute to pray in silence. And I'm going to just kind of lead you. So take a deep breath and relax your shoulders. And allow Jesus to pray in and through you in solidarity for the world. Lift your prayers for Baltimore. For Freddie Gray's family. For those who have felt injustices their whole life. For the police officers striving to do good. And for those who've made mistakes. For those whose anger led to more pain and violence. For people, for churches, to share love where this community needs it most. For Nepal, for the heartache, for the lives lost, for the thousands and thousands of grievers, for the infant baby found alive in the rubble. For humanitarian aid workers. For water. Food. For arms to hold. For a brighter tomorrow in Nepal. And God, we join our hearts to thank you this morning, to thank you for this word, solidarity, to ask you, God, to move our hearts, to reshape them in your ways. Help us to be a community that strives towards this great vision.